The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching a rare Triple Money Time weekend preview edition of Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my colleague, the esteemed professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to tell you why cash registers continue to have an impact on a college conference championship game for tomorrow, why one team goes from being giants to mere mortals as the season progresses on, and it's going to be bedlam on Saturday night. Not just in Stillwater, but hopefully for your pockets as well, all in a good way.
So, Dave, Friday morning, here we are in studio here in Las Vegas. Huge card of action last night, NFL, college football, college hoops. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
You know, something we actually have talked about a couple of times on this show over the course of the past month, including Money Time segments where we played against this team. We've done postmortems about the situation. But here's the way it plays out of Texas A&M. Mike Sherman gets fired, did not do a bad job there, but now when you read the postmortems of the other media, what do you read? Well, Sherman's team was rated in the top 10 this season and was a major disappointment. As we've said before on the air, no, they weren't. That's not the story. Here's the real story, and here's our Vegas Sports A exclusive. Media and coaches get it dead wrong. Here's the headline. How could respected sports writers and college football coaches take a relatively average team and rate them in the top 10 to open the season? What sort of lapse in judgment caused that to happen? Because that's the real story here. Maybe it does fall in between. A&M was a bit of a disappointment, but not the disappointment they're being portrayed to be. That was never a top 10 team. The real story is how the media got it that wrong to begin with. Maybe Mike Sherman deserved a little bit better. Teddy, what do you bring with us on a Friday morning?
Well, there's two things that I want to talk about in my first take today. And first of all, we have to keep talking about this Super Bowl party. I know we don't have details yet, but yes, we talked about it early in the week. There's been a flurry of emails passed back and forth in the Vegas Sports Day community. And guess what? It looks like this party is going to happen for Super Bowl weekend. So 2 months down the road, but obviously if you're planning schedule-wise, we're going to continue to announce details as they become available. But it does look like this party's going to happen. So keep that in the back of your minds as you're thinking about what you want to do on Super Bowl weekend. I can tell you, I can't tell you because I've never been to the big game, but if you're not going to the game itself, there's no better place to watch it than right here in Las Vegas. That's first take number one. First take number two, missed free throws, man. It's killing us. Last night cost us a play of the day bet on DePaul in a game where DePaul didn't play well for extended stretches, made a big run in the second half, were in position to win and cover, maybe even by margin, in the final minute, in the final 30 seconds, in the final 15 seconds. What happens? Clunk, brick, rock. There, they missed the free throws, cost us a bet, and left Andy Kennedy at Ole Miss real happy about escaping with a win against DePaul last night. Free throws and missed free throws will come into play on a consistent basis throughout the course of the college basketball season. You don't want to freak out too much when your team doesn't connect on them, but it's something that if this happens to DePaul again in the future, it's the type of thing that may feed on itself, something you want to be aware of. Let's shift focus right now to MarketWatch. And, you know, we talked yesterday about the conundrum that Southern Miss faces in their matchup for the Conference USA Championship this weekend against Houston. What about the Houston Cougars? They've got a big issue going on right now because Kevin Sumlin, their head coach, his name's being linked to every job, Arizona State, Texas A&M. Where's Sumlin going to go? And How's it going to affect the Cougars as they take the field against the Golden Eagles tomorrow?
It all started yesterday afternoon when Doug Holler from the Arizona Republic reported that Arizona State had made a specific job offer to someone. Now, the university later denies that. We're not sure who's right or who's wrong. Kind of an ethical issue if you're Arizona State, that even if you want to offer that job to someone, you wait till after the game Saturday. You wait till Sunday, wait till Monday, when they've got that window between the conference championship and their BCS bowl. Apparently that's true. And now, how long did it take from the time Mike Sherman was fired till these rumors come up for someone to maybe stick pretty close to Houston and go to Texas A&M? All over the papers this morning. Someone, a very attractive candidate, someone who not only coaches a good tactical game, but boy, does he relate to the players well. It looks like he could actually be a dynamite recruiter. And maybe this is part of the A&M conundrum in that maybe they thought, okay, Sherman wasn't quite that bad, but we're going into the SEC next. We have to become really, really good. It could be someone there. He's certainly sitting in a nice position from a bidding war standpoint. If it's ASU or A&M, there's a lot of money on the table. But if you're the Houston players, you're about to play the biggest game of your careers. You really have enjoyed working with this coach, and now you're finding out a day or two before the game that your coach might be leaving you for greener pastures. Teddy, that's got to be a little awkward.
It sure does. And Houston does have one advantage in that regard in terms of their senior quarterback, Case Keenum. We're talking about a sixth-year senior, a guy with more maturity than your average college quarterback, to put it mildly. And Houston has been able to avoid distractions, really stayed under the radar all year long. But the leadership that they have, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, has been very real so far this year. They potentially could be able to get past a distraction like this. But I got to shift back to talk about some of these programs. Talk about a team like Ole Miss. Talk about a team like Texas A&M. What are realistic expectations for programs like this?
Yeah, I'd say one of the issues that they have is it's called the SEC West. Now, here's your problem. We had talked about the Ole Miss coaching search. Now, we're going to talk about the A&M coaching search. In that bracket, in that SEC West, Nick Saban, Les Miles, Bobby Petrino. Well, good luck winning a whole lot of games there. Good luck trying to elevate into that upper tier of that conference. It's just not going to happen, especially if Dan Mullen stays at Mississippi State. Now, you're talking about some awfully good coaches on that side. So how good are you going to be? And if you're Texas A&M and you're disillusioned with a 6-6 this year, be prepared for a lot of disillusionment going forward. 6-6 is going to be about as good as you're going to be able to do for a while in that SEC West. As for the CUSA game, we won't do that one in money time, but we alluded a little bit to it yesterday. Even though Southern Miss can actually make more money for the program by losing the game, that doesn't matter to the kids on the field. They don't care about Southern Miss making money in the future. They care about a chance to win that championship and be known as the team that beat Houston, knocked them off that pedestal, and out of a BCS game. So, yeah, we've got some Southern Miss plus 14.5 in our pockets. You might not see the hook anymore. A lot of 14s are still out there. Secondary could compete with Keenum a little bit. They're number two in the nation in interception returns for touchdowns. There's an athleticism there. They will also score on Houston. We'll have a little bit of that in our pockets. You might want to do the same.
And speaking of having stuff in your pockets, we've got emails and forum questions in our pockets, and we want you to send us more. This is your show, and the more contributions we get from you, our viewing audience, the better show it's going to be. So keep those questions coming. Email address sportsday@covers.com. You can send the questions in via Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, you should be already involved in the Covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now. Covers.com. Click on community and then click on the forums to get involved. When we come back, is the Tom Coughlin late season fade already in progress? Stay tuned. We'll find out.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch-Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to respond to some of the questions we've been getting. And let's start with this one from D-Pain in the Covers posting forum. He asks, reading the story on Billy Walters and the IRS, I'm wondering just how prevalent beards are for Vegas wise guy. Does every serious pro capper have runners in town in Las Vegas?
Things are changing here in Las Vegas, and part of why we're so excited about the landscape on this show is, you know, we had a window of about a full decade where they were actually turning away from sports betting, not here in Nevada. They got more excited about slot machines, about doing these big mega resorts. They were acting late to the demographics all along. They were building all these new slot machines when they don't have a market for it anymore. They were building these bigger casinos without much of a market for it. Take a look at the Cosmopolitan and their casino drop numbers compared to other aspects of that property. They neglected sports here. The offshore stepped in, went to the lead. That's changing now. Cantor Gaming in town making a big impact already. William Hill on the way. So for the past decade, it wasn't big to have runners here in Las Vegas necessarily, because even runners weren't going to be able to get all that much money bet. And again, for all that Nevada appears to be, but 120, 150 casinos statewide, we're down to only about 7 or 8 different sports lines because you have so many conglomerations out there. If you go up and down the strip, you might think, oh, you've got a couple of dozen sports books. No, only a few different lines available because of the way the books are connected with each other. So it hasn't been that big of a deal here. Back in the early 90s, yeah, we saw a whole lot more of that. We're going to see a little bit more in the years ahead. But some of the things that will change a little bit. Maybe this will be Cantor's influence. We're going to see other books doing the same thing. The ability to bet remotely, where you don't have to go to the book anymore. And if you guys are coming out for the Super Bowl party, think about that. If you can establish an account on Friday, play it through the weekend, you don't have to go book to book for your bets. You've got a Droid app, you know, phone that'll take their Droid app, you're going to be able to bet wherever you are inside the state of Nevada. So yeah, those things are going to be changing a little bit over time, but for the past decade, runners just haven't been that necessary here.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the existence of runners, the number of runners in Las Vegas, way down from where it was from when I first moved to town in 1998. At that point, walking to any sports book in Nevada, particularly the leading sports books, the Stardust of the world, and that's all it was. You know, you weren't seeing the big bettors. You were seeing the guys who were making the bets for the big bettors. Now, in the modern world, where you can make bets offshore with a simple click, where you can make bets remotely, even here in the state of Nevada, the need for runners not nearly what it once was. That being said, if you're a serious bettor and you're dealing with traffic issues and, oh, I got to get down to stations before they move the, you know, before I lose the hook, you're in a race against other bettors and oftentimes to get the good number, and having someone who's willing or able to get around town for you sometimes is definitely a benefit, regardless of the legality of that particular issue. Let's transition. It's inside the numbers time. And today's Inside the Numbers segment is brought to you by NFLTeamTrends.com. If you want to be able to unlock a lot of winning ideas and greatly reduce your research time in the process, head over to NFLTeamTrends.com. We've been using and getting good numbers from them throughout the course of the last couple of weeks. Dave?
One of the things you'll find when you do your research is something that showed you a little bit about why the Giants were so poor against New Orleans last week. And we've seen this little pattern start to develop through time. Tom Coughlin's teams do not have a lot of staying power. And it's interesting to see how dramatic this has been throughout his career. When we go inside the numbers for Friday, let's break these Coughlin numbers down into the first half of the season and the second half. Look at how dramatic they are. First half of the season, 47-17 over 8 years straight up. In the second half, only 24-35. Now, that doesn't add up equally because there's still 5 more games to be played this year. And look at the point spread equivalents. 39-22-3, the first 8 games of the season, only 25-33-1 down the stretch, shows that some of the things that Tom Coughlin does don't hold up well over the course of 16 games. A team that wants to play physical finds out that when the bodies wear down, they're not as good as they are at the start. And if you're not as sophisticated in your game planning, that also catches up to you.
when we come back. North Carolina, Kentucky, is it March? No, it's December. That's why we love college hoops.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Okay, guys, it's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to the Carrier Dome in Syracuse tonight. Florida, the Gators travel to meet the Orange. Right now, the current number, Syracuse, about a 6.5-point favorite over the Gators at home this evening.
It's been the second time we talked about Florida on this show. The first was when they played at Ohio State earlier in the season. And we talk about things that we like in terms of a team's ability to adapt and play well on the road. Veteran guards. And you're going to hear that over and over and over again with teams on the road. Florida's got that. Irving Walker, Kenny Boynton, they've been around for a long time. They played together for a long time. They're not going to be bothered by this environment. And when you look at how well they played at Ohio State, contrasted to how poorly Duke played in Columbus, it says a lot. But now here's the problem. For all the experience these guys have, they haven't gotten any taller. Talking about a backcourt that goes 5'8 and 6'2. Syracuse has one of the taller backcourts in the country. Scoop Jardine, only 6'2. Everyone else, 6'4 or taller in that Syracuse backcourt. That includes James Sutherland, who's a guard, but a 6'8 guard. So now, are these Florida guards going to be a little bit too short to have to cope with those Syracuse zone defenses? Instead of the experience mattering, could it be their lack of size that comes into play tonight?
And that lack of size becomes even more of an issue because Florida is going to be playing without 6'10 Eric Murphy in the lineup tonight, which leaves them shorthanded in the front court and short in the backcourt. And we have to give Syracuse a little bit of credit here, maybe more than a little bit. This is a team that's faced an enormous amount of distractions, dealing with the Bernie Fine situation, a head coach Jim Boeheim under fire, obviously a very serious issue, and an issue that there's no one on the team that is probably relating to the media firestorm, but yet they still have to deal with. And the fact, I was very interested to see how Syracuse was going to respond against Eastern Michigan the other night. And it was the type of ball game where the Orange, you know, they were favored by 28. They were supposed to blow Eastern out of the water. Game was close for a half, you know, 8-point lead at half. Second half, 52-24 run out for Syracuse. End up winning the game, covering the spread. In fact, covered the spread in the second half alone. And to me, that's a positive sign, a sign of positive character from a team that's faced a heck of a lot of adversity so far already this season, despite their 7-0 record.
Now time for a different character test. Let's go to Louisville tonight. Vanderbilt at Louisville. Right now, Rick Pitino and his team, an 8-point favorite. Florida brings toughness on the road. So many other teams will look to bring that toughness. Here's our question about Vanderbilt. Do they have that toughness? Now, we can talk about the physical part. Festus Ezeli, their best guy inside, he's still out, so they will miss him in a hostile environment. But it's the toughness around the rest of this team. They've got good shooters. They can do a lot of things right when it's going well. But remember back to earlier in the week when we talked about the Xavier-Vanderbilt game and how Xavier had those locked-down defensive guards at crunch time. Well, Vandy, at home, went over 8 minutes without scoring at the critical juncture of the game. The last 4 minutes in regulation, the first 3 minutes in overtime, didn't score a point, lost the game. Do they have the toughness to go into a hostile environment like this and play well?
From a point spread perspective, this one's really interesting because Vanderbilt has not been a good point spread team so far. They have not lived up to market expectations. But if you look at the Commodore's schedule to date, they played 7 games and they've been favored in every one of them. You know, 2 non-line contests, 5 times they were favorites. Now they're dogs, and not just small dogs. You know, they're catching 8 points here, even more than that, in some locations. So we're seeing a different type of result. Going to cash a Commodore's ticket tonight. Vandy can lose this game. They can lose it by 6, 7, and you're going to get the money if you support the Commodores. When I break down point spread records, ATS records, I really like to look and break it down into particular roles. How a team's doing as a favorite, a short favorite, a big favorite. How's team doing at a dog, as a dog, short dog, big dog. And here we're getting Vandy in a situation and a point spread role that we haven't seen from them so far this season. Now, Louisville, coming off that 13-point win over Long Beach State earlier in the week, much to my chagrin. But if you remember that ball game, Louisville, they kind of did their best, you know, a team with limited depth, and they kind of did their best to blow that game in the last minute. At one point, the lead was cut to 7. Long Beach State had a run out and an opportunity for a layup to cut it to 5. Turned it over. Final result, Louisville wins by 13, thanks to 8 consecutive made free throws down the stretch.
And one of the things we followed with Louisville, and they've been an insider six-pack segment, is how depleted that roster is right now. Rick Pitino wants to be able to use 10 or 11 players, press aggressively all over the court, try to wear the other team down. Not only can he not do that, it's about a 7-man rotation right now, but he specifically said this week he's toned his practices down even more because he can't afford to take another injury. Here's Pitino's biggest concern, as he voices it. I'm not getting my players in the kind of condition they're going to need to be in for the Big East schedule ahead. I'm worried about this group. We're a little bit worried too right now. Good viewing tonight, but probably not good betting.
Let's take a look at Saturday afternoon's game in Lexington, Kentucky right now. Look ahead line says Kentucky about a 2.5-point home favorite against North Carolina.
We had Kentucky under the microscope last night. We said on yesterday's show we were going to do that. How is John Calipari going to prepare for this Carolina visit? He's only got 6 players in his rotation. Yes, they're really, really good players. But we thought, you know what, you're going to beat St. John's comfortably. This is your one chance maybe to develop a little bit of depth and also to get your team to manage tempo a little bit. Your key is to have your guys fresh for North Carolina, not to blow St. John's out. But what did we see? Once again, he didn't go to the bench. Those 6 kids did the bulk of just about everything. And what we found particularly interesting is in the second half, they chose to run, play sloppy, a lot of schoolyard ball. Now, they could play it well because they are dynamically talented, but they got out of structure. And I thought, okay, here's your chance, John. Work on your end game. Work on keeping your kids in structure. Instead, what did we see? A lot of running, a lot of alley-oop passes, a lot of lobs that turned into dunks. Exactly what you don't do when you have a major challenge coming up just a day and a half later.
It's so much fun doing a show with a wet hacking cough. I hope you guys enjoy this. But the bottom line for this Kentucky team so far, we know how talented they are. But what they've done so far this season, they have played extraordinary defense. And by extraordinary, how does this sound? 31% shooting allowed. Well, let's give them a break. 31.3% shooting allowed through the first 7 games of the season. That's remarkable. That's the type of defense that wins games and covers point spreads. Of course, North Carolina certainly a bit of a step up in class. Kentucky's played some solid opposition, but North Carolina, you know, they were ranked number one before Kentucky was and may well be ranked number one when this season is over. And when we talk about these top 5, top 10 type matchups, in general, thought process is, hey, give me points. You know, give me points with whatever side you want to give me points in. This has all the makings of a game that could come down to the final possession.
Yes, one of the things we've always believed, when it's A against A, the home court really doesn't mean that much. You don't bother North Carolina type of athletes in this setting. If anything, the fact that now they're the ones looking up at Kentucky, you know, in the national polls, gives them just that little extra edge going in. Kentucky has been, as Teddy said, just super on defense. And it's not just numbers. When you look at them, you've got wingspans all over the place. You've got shot blockers at every position. They play hard on it. Let's give Calipari credit for that. But you're not going to intimidate the Carolina kids with that sort of defensive pressure. They'll relish it. They'll take the ball to the basket aggressively. This could be a loose and wide open game. And it's one that maybe Kentucky isn't quite ready for just yet.
When we come back, it's Bedlam in Stillwater, but Bedlam nonetheless. Bedlam nonetheless. We're going to break it down for you in Money Time College Football Edition.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
It's money time, college football edition, and I don't get to dress up as a weather girl this week. We don't need a full map, but I do want to talk about a couple of games that are likely to be impacted by the weather situation going around the country this weekend. Let's start with Iowa State and Kansas State. Windy and cold, wind chill falling into the 20s with a chance of rain that could turn to snow. Sounds like December out there. Sounds like Vegas out there. It almost snowed here last night. Oklahoma State. Chance of rain early in the day, could be windy at kickoff. Also, low temperatures around 40 in that ballgame. Beware for some of these weather conditions. We have more games being played indoors this week than your average college football weekend. Let's start with this Oklahoma-Oklahoma State matchup. Bedlam in Stillwater. Oklahoma State -3, total of 72. And there are some Oklahoma State defensive numbers that really need a breakdown, Dave. Why don't you share with us?
Yeah, and this is Bedlam with the volume turned up tomorrow. Arguably the biggest Oklahoma-Oklahoma State game we've ever encountered. And the markets are pricing it like it's an even game. We're not necessarily sure that it is. We see where those mistakes come from. And again, these have been topics we've talked about on this show in post-mortem segments. Oklahoma State's offense is blazing. They run an awful lot of plays. But not only do they run a lot, they run them well. So number two in total offense, you could say, okay, they're number two, but they run a lot of plays. No, they're also number three in yards per play, number six in passing efficiency. That means you're just not running a lot of plays, you're running them well. Here's why it impacts the defense. When you look at their overall numbers, they will look terrible. And you'll see a lot of people alluding to that in pregame breakdowns. But you got to put a little caveat in there. Only one team in the country, Tulsa, has faced more offensive plays than Oklahoma State has. So obviously, if you're on the field a lot, you're going to give up a lot of yards. But when you focus on the efficiency of this defense, now they're going to show you number 102 in passing yards allowed. How about number 15 in pass efficiency defense? That's the real number. They've actually been an okay defensive unit. The bad stats are the fact that they simply had to be on the field for so many plays.
And that's something that we talked about early in the week when we did an Inside the Numbers segment talking about time of possession with Houston and Oklahoma State teams that score quickly and don't hold the ball as long. What happens? Your defense is on the field longer. Why are Okie State's defensive numbers so spotty? Real simple. You know, their offense has been so dominant, they've been blowout city throughout the second half of most of their games. And what do you do when you're a head coach and your team's up 4, 5, 6 touchdowns at the break? All right, guys, let's shorten the game. They play a lot of zone coverage and dropping 7 or 8 guys back and not worried about giving up yards or even points. They just don't want to do it quickly. The other key number here for Oklahoma State, and this may be the most impressive, I mean, they're number 6 in the nation in sacks, which is impressive, but number 2 in the nation in turnover margin. And normally you say, oh, turnovers, the bounce of the ball is going to bounce back the other way. That may happen. But the bottom line is this is an offense led by a 28-year-old senior quarterback who set all kinds of records this season, multi-year starter. They just don't turn the ball over a lot. When they did at Iowa State, obviously, it was an issue. They ended up losing the game and probably losing their national title hopes as a result. But they think with a win here, there's a chance they can get back into the mix. Oklahoma doesn't have that same type of mentality.
Now, when you talk about the veteran quarterback like Brandon Whedon, the things he's able to do, consider the weaknesses this Oklahoma defense showed down the stretch. Those two late-season losses, Texas Tech gets them for 41 points, 452 passing yards. Baylor, 45 points, 485 passing yards. Kind of tells you that this may not be the last time we talk about this game on today's show.
Let's go to the SEC championship game at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. Right now, LSU -13.5. There's some 14 starting to pop up. 46 is the total on this ballgame. The betting markets expect a defensive type struggle. And, you know, this is a Georgia team that's won 10 in a row. But when we look at who they beat, what do we have? Teams that have a combined 14-42 record in the SEC? Is Georgia real? Do they have any chance of hanging with LSU?
That's going to be the question. We like the Georgia talent. It looks like they can match up at the line of scrimmage. And by some measurements, it looked like they came on towards the end of the season. But again, when we talked earlier in the show about the issues that Mississippi and Texas A&M have in that SEC West, look at the luck of the draw that Georgia had. LSU, Alabama, Arkansas, they were rated the top three teams in the country just a week ago. Georgia didn't have to play any of them. So had they really come on and made strides? Or was it just a case of having the schedule draw come out the right way? We don't have an answer for that before the game starts, but again, because it's Championship Saturday, and you're able to make wagers during the game, including halftime for most of you, but if you're out here in Nevada, if you got like a Cantor account, all the in-running stuff comes into play, you may find windows of opportunity where you can see, you know what, these guys are standing toe-to-toe. They're going to be in the hunt here. Or, yeah, these guys are outclassed just a little bit. But here's the issue on the other side. It's not a huge game for LSU. They have no reason to go for a margin. And even if they lose to Georgia, it looks like they will still be in the national championship game. So you may not see the A game out of the Tigers.
And when we talk about Senior Bowl, this is a concept we brought up on the show repeatedly, talking about how the seniors from two different schools have faced off against one another in previous meetings. Well, LSU and Georgia have played twice in these current seniors' careers. LSU won one of those games by 7. Georgia won the other by 14, each team winning on their opponent's home field. So we talk about a class difference between these two schools. Doesn't really look like there is one. Now let's go to the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis. Right now, Wisconsin, 9.5-point favorite over Michigan State. Total in that ball game, right around 55.
We've done the Senior Bowl breakdown on this game twice on the show this year. So let's give it to you one more time so you see exactly how they match up against each other. Again, there's a public perception that Wisconsin's a lot better, which is why the line is where it is. But these teams have now gone head-to-head 5 times when it's been coach versus coach and the 50-year seniors on these rosters in play. Michigan State wins 3 of the 5. They win the scoreboard 160 to 154. They win the total offense 2,170 to 2,096. There has not been an iota of difference between these teams. The games have been that close. So why all of a sudden Wisconsin, such a big favorite? They're a team that has looked pretty when they've won. They've had some dynamic home performances. Laid out Nebraska. Laid out Penn State. But what about on the road? They go to East Lansing. They lose to Michigan State. They go to Columbus. They lose to Ohio State. And remember another postmortem segment that might not quite come to mind for you. Just 2 weeks ago, Wisconsin being badly outplayed at Illinois, down 14-0 in the second quarter, when the Illinois punter fumbles a snap, gives Wisconsin the ball near the goal line for a touchdown that turned that flow around. Yeah, this has been a real pretty team in Madison, but they have not been anything all that special once they've left campus.
Yeah, and you remember the first meeting between these two teams. It was in East Lansing, and Wisconsin was favored by 7 in that ballgame. So the point spread for that contest certainly correlates with the point spread for this contest. But, of course, if you're viewing it as results-oriented, that was the wrong point spread there. Michigan State ended up winning the game the first time around. Admittedly, it came on a crazy Hail Mary at the end of the contest, but they found a way to win the game as 7-point dogs. Now here catching more than a touchdown. My focus in this one has been more on the total than on the side. Again, we're talking about a fast track. We're talking about an indoor surface, so you don't need to worry about weather conditions. We're talking about a Wisconsin team that kind of has a plodding reputation, but they've played up-tempo repeatedly this season, and I think that may be their preferred method of attack against Michigan State. So I'm expecting points here. I like this game to go up and over the total. That's my gut reaction for Wisconsin and Michigan State.
Wish your gut didn't have to be so loud for those of us that have to sit there right next to you. Yeah, we actually agree with that total. You're going to see a loose and free-flowing game. We'll also have some Sparty Spartans in our pocket. But there's something better for your pockets for Saturday. Our NCAA play of the day for Saturday, let's go back to Stillwater. Let's look at Oklahoma State. We've talked about both teams' defenses before. Oak State underrated. Oklahoma's overrated. But you know what else we haven't seen? Oklahoma adapt well to losing Ryan Broyles and Dominic Whaley, their best receiver, their best running back. It's tough to lose both late in the year. Look for Oklahoma State to beat Oklahoma and maybe comfortably here. This game could stretch into double figures. The Oklahoma State Cowboys, bedlam into our pockets.
It's an 8-game winning streak Oklahoma has in that series. Malinsky and I say that winning streak comes to an end. When we come back, Money Time heads to the NFL.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
It's a Money Time NFL edition, and let's start in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where the Steelers, -6.5 total, 42.5 against the Cincinnati Bengals. These two teams met a couple weeks ago. Doesn't seem like long ago. And Pittsburgh, on the road in Cincy, won it by a touchdown, but at no point in that game were they really in position to pull away. Can they do it in the rematch, Dave?
You can see in these Cincinnati losses to Pittsburgh and Baltimore recently that they have made strides. They actually were able to stand toe-to-toe and gut it out against those teams, but that little polish was missing. Those two defeats, 5 Andy Dalton interceptions. Now, follow up after those two games, and what do we see from the Bengals? Life and death last week at home against Cleveland. Arguably, you could say if Cleveland doesn't botch a snap on that late field goal attempt, the Browns might have won that game, and it would be a 3-game Bengal losing streak. And that's the question is, do the Bengals have the staying power now? Now, when it becomes road games and these difficult step-ups, is the mental toughness and the physical toughness there? Defense that's already lost, Leon Hall, might be without Carlos Dunlap, might be without D'Amato Pico up front. When you're playing a physical team on the road, you want to have all hands on deck. Have we already seen the best the Bengals have for the 2011 season? Could this be a team that might fade a little bit down the stretch?
Well, I mean, you talk about the injuries for Cincinnati, and again, the defensive injuries never get as much hype as the offensive ones, but these are three huge players for the Bengals, all three of them. You know, Pico's their run stopper in the middle. Dunlap's their best pass rusher. Hall's their best cornerback. Without the three, and you need every cornerback you can get going up against Pittsburgh. Now, we saw kind of a sluggish, lethargic effort from the Steelers last Sunday night. They found a way to beat Kansas City and didn't look particularly impressive in the process. And that, I think, has influenced this number, driving it down from 7 to 6.5. People are still looking at the Steelers and saying, yeah, this team's pretty mediocre. But the other injury for Cincinnati we have to talk about, of course, is Cedric Benson, who has been unable to practice this week, likely to be Bernard Scott. But for Pittsburgh, well, since he's facing all these injuries, the Steelers, well, they're getting healthier. It looks like Lamar Woodley is going to be back in the lineup this week. Troy Polamalu has been cleared to play for Pittsburgh. So those are pretty two key defensive guys for the Steelers, especially going up against a rookie quarterback. I give Andy Dalton all kinds of credit. The Red Rifle's been a monster so far this season, but this is certainly a step up in class for a rookie QB. And as you mentioned, Dave, the 5 interceptions in the 2 games against Pittsburgh and Baltimore have me a little bit concerned about his ability to avoid mistakes in this game.
Let's go to our nation's capital in Washington, where the road favorite Jets are -3, 38.5, despite the fact that we don't see the Jet team that apparently the rest of the markets do, or the Jet team that maybe they believe themselves to be. If a Rex Ryan team is going to beat you, they're going to do it physically. Well, guess what? The Jets are winning some games this year, but that's not the way they're winning them. Look at the rushing. They've been outrushed in total yards. They've been outrushed in yards per attempt. They've given up more rushing touchdowns than they've gained. Look at the pass statistics. They've allowed more sacks than they've been able to get. That's not Jet football. They're not intimidating anyone anymore. This is a team that was overrated at the start of the year. Perhaps still, when we see this line, only 1-4 on the road this season, 3 of the losses coming in double figures, and the only win against a Buffalo team that was very depleted on that particular day. Jets don't look like the Jet team that people are trying to make them out to be.
Yeah, and you know, if you've bet on New York or Washington in every game this season, you made more money back in the Redskins. Even though the Jets have the better straight-up record, Washington has been the better value team from a points rate perspective. The Jets just 4-7 against the number, repeatedly failing to cover in multiple different roles. We've seen them as road favorites fail to cover, fail to win in a matchup at Denver a couple of weeks ago. We've seen them at home favorites, road dogs. Hasn't really mattered. The Jets have not been a profitable team and may not be one here. And meanwhile, here's a Redskins squad. They're getting healthier. No question, this is a better Washington team now than any Redskins team that was on the field a month ago. We saw them take Dallas to overtime. Then they outgained Seattle 416 to 250 last Sunday, and that win over the Seahawks looks even better after Seattle's demolishing of Philadelphia last night. And one of the key issues here for Washington is the ability of their defense to get to the opposing quarterbacks. Well, the Redskins, number three in the NFL in sacks this year, and it's coming from all over the field. You have Ryan Kerrigan with 6.5 sacks. He's certainly a candidate for a Defensive Rookie of the Year. You have Brian Arakpo with 6 sacks. You have Adam Character with 5. You have Stephen Bowen with 4.5. Washington's getting consistent defensive pressure. Mark Sanchez is a QB, making a lot of mistakes.
Let's go to the Meadowlands, where the undefeated Packers are 6.5, 52 over the Giants. Hey, we've already talked about the Giant late season fades under Tom Coughlin in the Inside the Numbers segment. You saw against New Orleans, a team that looked a little bit tired, a little weary on the field. But what happens this Sunday? Perry Fuel, the defensive coordinator, just went off yesterday. Just had a major rant talking about the lack of effort that he saw, not liking the way the team failed to compete once they fell behind. We shortened the tirade down to one sentence we thought would be particularly interesting. We don't coach pulling up short, and we're not going to accept pulling up short. So we won't pull up short again. That's talking about that lack of effort. Of course, with the linebacking situation the way it is, sometimes effort doesn't matter. There are some holes there. Maybe a little upside. Michael Boley returned to practice for the first time in a couple of weeks. His own quote is that he was on pace to be able to play Sunday. Maybe that could make a little difference. Could it be a one last reach back game for the Giants?
It could be, but it's not going to be easy. Certainly trend bettors have got to be aware of this one. If you've played on Thanksgiving Day, whether you won or lost on Thanksgiving, having that extra time to prepare for the following week has paid dividends for those teams and their supporters. How about this number? 12-0 against the spread in the post-Thanksgiving game over the last 2 years, or the previous 2 years, for teams that played on Thanksgiving Day. Again, you play the Thursday, you don't play till the following Sunday. That extra time has led teams to a 12-0 point spread mark in their next ballgames, whether you won or lost on Turkey Day. So that certainly bodes well for the Packers' chances in this one. But the Giants, it's not just Boley that they're likely to get back this week. What about Ahmad Bradshaw, who's, you know, a difference maker in that offense? I mean, if you watched Brandon Jacobs run last week, not running with fire, not running with passion, not showing big playability, Ahmad Bradshaw is a guy who tends to bring it. The Giants expected to have him back in the lineup. They're also likely to have Akeem Nicks back in the lineup as well, giving them a couple of key weapons on the offensive side of the football to give them a chance to trade points with this potent, potent Packers offense.
Yeah, the flip side here, and it's something we've followed carefully, and we're sort of intrigued with the way it's playing out. The Packers want to go undefeated. They're sort of making no bones about that. Now, in the past, when we've seen teams in this position, they said, no, the Super Bowl is what matters. We just want to get the home field advantage in the playoffs. We'll do what we can to work with our personnel later. You get the feeling the Packers want this, that it would mean something special for that franchise. It makes them a team that we're not going to buck unless we're really getting the best of the value down the stretch.
Let's go to New Orleans, where the Saints, -9, total 53.5, the Sunday night game against the resurgent Detroit Lions, the slumping Detroit Lions. What do you want to call them? They're somewhere in between the two. Since that 5-0 start, Detroit has had a losing record, but certainly a better edition of Detroit than we've seen in recent years, and it's a very rare setting. One team coming off a Thursday Thanksgiving game. I talked a moment ago about that 12-0 angle with teams that had played on Thanksgiving. And the other team with almost no time to prepare, or less time to prepare, coming off a Monday night home win. So Lions with the edge in preparation time here. Will it matter on the field?
It's been a tough field this year. New Orleans 5-0 straight up and against the spread at home, including some wins over some awfully good teams on this field because they could just execute at such a high level. That's going to be part of the question for the Lions. Do they have that discipline yet to take on this type of opponent on the road? Their defense wins with aggressiveness, not necessarily with savvy or sophistication. Now that defense will not have Sue up front, not going to have Delmas in the secondary. They don't know about cornerback Chris Houston right now. Is this a type of team that has a lot of raw talent but can be exploited by the kind of precision that New Orleans is going to throw at them?
Well, I mean, Matthew Stafford, 9 interceptions over the past 3 weeks. He's worn a glove in all those ballgames after fracturing his right index finger. Well, in practice this week, no glove for Matthew Stafford. But he's also not going to have a running back. Kevin Smith, who's been such a resurgent factor for Detroit, he's not supposed to play. Maurice Morris, the projected starter for the Lions.
So we probably don't get involved in this one because of where the line sets. But we do have one we think we can take home for you on Sunday. Play of the daytime. If we had our audio permissions worked out, what a great time for Hail to the Redskins, the greatest of all NFL fight songs. But let's look at Washington, plus at three, against an overrated Jet team. When Teddy talked about that Washington pass rush, what's the single biggest issue the Jets have had? Protecting Mark Sanchez in the pocket, of all things. They haven't run the ball well enough to establish the play action. Sean Green, dealing with some banged-up ribs, he's not 100%. They're not going to run it that well. The Jets are not a road favorite in this setting. Let's look for Washington to win the game straight up, and those 3 points being offered, nice little cushion for the pockets.
What about that Houston Oilers song, you know? Houston Oilers, Houston. No.
There's not a team in Houston.
Not
the
anymore. Oilers. It was
not
a great
Oilers
song.
Anymore.
It was a great song.
But they're not the Houston Oilers.
You said a great NFL team. What about the Pittsburgh's going to the Super Bowl?
That was an awful song, actually.
Well, it stuck in my head for like 5 years.
There was a Pittsburgh polka that was better than that one.
And speaking of polkas, it's polka time for you because we're out. Have a great weekend for Malinsky. Zabransky. Enjoy the games. Good luck. We'll talk to you again on Monday.